And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms and restrictions apply.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code The Athletic, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
It's not about me. I'm only here for a minute. And I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Hello, welcome to our Laz and Powers. This is Scott Powers, joined by Mark Lazarus. Mark is in beautiful Calgary. Where are you?
I am, yes. You know, it's funny. Like, I give this city a lot of crap because I hate the arena so much.
Yeah.
I actually really like Calgary as a city. It's like a big cosmopolitan city. There's good restaurants here. I got this amazing view outside my window of the whole skyline. I just really, really hate the press box. I'm not looking forward to tonight's game in the slightest.
I will be praying for you.
Have you? You've been to Calgary, right? I haven't taken every Western Canada trip, have I?
No, it's been a minute though since I. I don't know the last time I've been to Calgary. I know I've been to Toronto, and I did the Toronto Montreal a few years ago. And
I feel like you always give me the Canada trips. I don't know. Do you hate Canada? Is there something I don't know about you?
No. I don't know. I think I was in Canada last year. So
you've been in the Calgary press box, the Saddle Dome press box.
Yes.
You've done the walk.
Yes,
Did that bother you at all?
It's okay. Yeah, it's not, yeah, I don't know. I guess I'm not like term. Yeah, it's.
I feel like it's all or nothing. I mean, the first time, like, I can still remember, it was 10 years ago, actually next week. I remember it was the Ray Emery game. Remember the Ray Emery game when we first came to the beat and he made like 48 saves?
Oh, yeah.
And it kept the 21-0-3 streak alive in the early stages. I was on the ice show trip. One of the best goaltending performances I've ever seen. It was in Calgary. And I remember that day because, you know, Chris Cook and Tracy Myers had psyched me out about how scared I was because they knew I was afraid of heights. And they psyched me out about this press box. And we get here. And I literally, there's like, you know, there's this long catwalk to get to the dangling death box of doom. It's like this really long, narrow, short railings on the side. Walking, there's like a chain link fence door you have to get through. And I was so petrified. I stood there for at least 45 minutes talking to the security guard there who was trying to psych me up, saying, I see this a handful of times a year. You're going to be okay. Nobody's ever fallen. You know, I'm like, I know. Now I'm like, I've been here so many times that I'm kind of past it, but yeah. I still hate it.
Yeah.
But I do the same. I have to make sure my backpack's on like both shoulders so I have nice center of balance. I put my arms out on both sides of the thing so I can touch the railings. And I just like hold my breath as I'm walking down the plank there. God, I hate every second of this place. And then you have all these freaking writers going over the scoreboard in the middle of the true catwalk part of it. You're all freaking insane. You're all nuts. You're taking your cameras and hanging it over the railings. Like, what the hell is wrong with you people?
We should just get you just buy you a seat so you can sit and watch the game in the stands for this one.
Should. Or like an old high school basketball thing. Like, put a table in the corner somewhere, you know? Just, it's funny because, like, I don't have any trouble flying. I'll go on any roller coaster in the world. I don't have any problem with heights as long as I'm strapped into something.
Yeah.
But once you put the burden of survival on my own coordination, I want no part of it, man. Yeah, none.
No, I hear you. I was I know we talked a little bit before we got on the air, but the Blackhawks have lost the last two games, and you know, like, there was this panic. Even, you know, I wrote about it, and I'm guilty of this. Every time that they win five or six games, I think that the tank is off. But it's other teams are winning. Like, I've come to the point where I'm done writing about it. Like, we'll see what happens. Like, with a month left in the season, we'll see what happens at the trade deadline. But I didn't expect other teams to start winning games, and now. Now Anaheim has a 344 points percentage. Columbus has 344. Blackhawks at 348.
It's a battle, man. It's actually going to be kind of exciting down the stretch.
I honestly, and I wrote about the other day. I thought the points percentage is going to be, and it may be. I think 320 has been the number that we've seen throughout the season. But you know, I mean, for Columbus to even come back and win last night, and yeah, it's. I mean, not that the last ten. Anaheim's 4-5-1. Columbus is 3-6-1. Blackhawks are 6-4-0. Arizona's 2-8-0. Yeah, for any of these teams, they have like three or four wins in the last 10. Like, it's significant in this sort of race, you know?
Well, you know, it comes back to what Gary Bettman was saying last week, where he's like, teams don't tank. And we all laughed.
Gary Bettman says a lot of things that are untrue, yeah.
Oh, yeah, we all love the digital boards, and nobody wants salary cap information and all that stuff.
And there aren't CTE.
But exactly, yeah. But he's not wrong, because he lawyered it, because he's a lawyer and that's what he does. He said that the players and the coaches don't tank, which we've been saying all along. Players don't tank. Coaches right. don't tank. Nobody's in that locker room hoping and praying some 17-year-old comes to save them. That's not how it works. They don't care about that Connor Bedard or anyone else that's in that draft. They don't think about it at all. They don't care. In fact, I think they really enjoy screwing over management. I mean, there's got to be a little bit of that. Nobody's going to ever admit it, because this is hockey. But when management puts the team together to lose, there is that major league sense of it. Like, oh, what the hell, man? You signed me because you think I suck? You put me on this team because you think I suck? Because everybody knows the Blackhawks are trying to lose. So the players rally around that. There's a bunker mentality in there. They talked about it in training camp. Like, yeah, we want to prove people wrong. Now, they're bad. They're going to lose most of their games. But they're still professional hockey players. They're still at the top of their craft. They're still proud individuals. And, you know, Luke Richardson said it in his introductory press conference. I'm going to make this as hard on Kyle as possible. And he is. You know, the Blackhawks are not good, but they're not like the Bad News Bears. They're not some bumbling idiots out there. They're still NHL players. Yeah. You're going to win some hockey games.
It'd be interesting to talk to like Sharp or Keith or those guys who were there right before things got good, like whether they thought like Kane and Taves were like there was any anticipation knowing that those guys could change that, you know?
Hey, stop giving away story ideas. We don't have enough of them to go around.
Which I guess it would be a slight transition to Brent Seabrook, who you met with this week in Vancouver and who's coaching, volunteering with the Vancouver Giants. And it was a fun story. What was your takeaway? What was it like talking with him about this stuff?
I'll tell you, I've been trying to get Brent on the phone for the last, you know, year or so. And he basically through the Giants spokesperson said, look, I'm done doing interviews. I'm never doing interviews again. Like, I gave away too much time in my life to do interviews. I'm not doing interviews. So I didn't talk to him for the Duncan Keith story. I did for NHL 99 like I wanted to. He just decided he didn't want to do interviews anymore. So I kind of like the timing of this trip was magnificent for me because, you know, the Blackhawks were in Vancouver the same week that he was coaching the top prospects game. So I figured he'd have to talk, right? And so I wrangled a press pass at the last second. I took an Uber and I went out there. And I was all braced for him to give me all kinds of shit when he saw me. Like, because for 10 years, he gave me shit every time. You know, I always say he's everybody's big brother. He's like, puts your head in his arm and gives you the proverbial noogie, right? Like, no matter what you do, he does that. We always got along great, but he always gives you shit. And he was so pleasant. He was like, hey, Laz, what's going on? And we talked, and he asked how the beat was. He asked what it's like covering this team. He asked about some of the new guys. He just seems like he's in a really good headspace. He seems really happy. I mean, he's clearly itching to do something, but he's got to wait for his Lightning contract to run out at the end of next season. But he seems just like he's in a good spot. And you don't always see that. I was glad to see it because so many of these guys struggle with that transition from player to ex-player. Because, I mean, Seabrook's 37 years old. He's a young man. And his career is done. And like he said, he's like, my dad's 66 and he's not retired yet. So it's really weird to think that I'm retired. And a lot of these guys struggle. Dave Bolin told me he struggled with it for a while. You know, a lot of these guys, you got to find a purpose in your life, right? And Seabrook seems to be finding it.
Some of those, I mean, you look at what Aduya is doing, and Sharp certainly found a calling, and
Hossa.
And Hossa, yeah, Hossa's got so much going on. And Sharp and Duncan Keith even joining the Oilers. Like some of those guys seem like they, and they didn't wait very long, you know, like they've jumped into something. Maybe some of that's just understanding that it's important to kind of keep going, you know.
Well, did you like Brent Seabrook never struck me as the type that was going to become a coach of some sort. I always thought that once his career is over, he was just going to go home and just chill and just be done with it. But so I was a little surprised to hear that he was coaching and that he was taking to it so well, because I didn't think he had the, the patience for it, the temperament for it. I mean, he's obviously a great locker room guy and a great teammate and all those things, but I didn't see him with that. But I think he missed being in the locker room. He missed hanging with the boys and, you know, talking to a lot of those Vancouver Giants. I mean, these are teenagers. These are kids. And, you know, I was struck that they all called him Siebes. I'm like, and they all text him all the time. I'm like, shouldn't you be starstruck by him? And they're just like, we were at first, but he just so quickly puts you at ease that it really, he sits there in the middle of the locker room telling stories about Kane and Taves in the old days. And he just feels like he's one of your teammates. He might be 20 years older than you, but he's just one of the boys. And that's always been his strength, is whether you're a young guy or you're a veteran, he's your best friend on the team. And I think that when he took Kirby Dach into his home that last year he was in Chicago, he really started veering towards that mentor role, and I think he really took to it. And I think, you know, if he wants a job, the Blackhawks will give him a job. He's been talking with Kyle and Norm and all these guys for all this whole time. But he'd be great in junior hockey, man. He's really seems to take to it.
He's doing once every few weeks or something like that right now?
He lives in Kelowna, which is like a 4-hour drive away. So he comes down like twice a month, spends a couple of days in Vancouver. His family is his parents live, unfortunately, his mother just died a couple weeks ago, but his parents lived in that town. It's like right next to where the Giants practice. So he comes down, he gets to see his family, and he works with the kids, does a lot of one-on-one work. He does a lot of talks. He'll do like a team talk. Basically, whatever they want him to do, he does. It works with the power play. He works with forwards. It's not like he's just working with defensemen. I mean, he's a former NHL All-Star and a 3-time champion. There's a lot he can impart for these young guys.
I was just thinking of the story that I did on Keith Seabrook, his brother, and how confusing that was with just the name. Yeah. Like,
someone said, he's like, Brent was here the other day, and, you know, Keith was here too. And I'm like, oh, well, Keith? What? Oh, wait, Keith. Oh, you mean Keith Seabrook. Okay, yeah. Sorry.
It's fascinating. It's, it'll be interesting to see how many of those ex-Blackhawks ended up with the, you know, with the organization in the end. I mean, I know that Hulse has still been talking with the Blackhawks about doing something, and I think there's some just logistics that are difficult just with him being in Slovakia. But it was interesting that Keith even joined. I guess Keith's still under contract too, the fact that he joined the Oilers in some sort of capacity.
As some of these guys just want to be like ambassador types, make appearances, make a little cash that way. I know Daniel Carcillo was doing that for a little while. A lot of these, it's a good way to make extra cash and still be kind of part of the franchise. But I think for some of these guys, they want more than that. Like Brian Campbell, I mean, crap, he's basically an assistant GM. He's a special advisor to the GM. And he's at at all the scouting and at all the games and everything like that. So I think some of these guys want more. They want to be, they want real second careers in hockey. And I think Seabrook's going to be one of them.
I only saw some, I was just following it on Twitter yesterday, but I think a lot of the Blackhawks organization was probably at that game last night too. I think Kyle Davidson was going to be there for the prospect game and Bedard was playing. So, it'll be, I talked to Mike Donahue recently, the Blackhawks amateur, director of amateur scouting, and they had their first meetings 2 weeks ago and after the World Juniors and kind of catching up. And, we talked about the top four, and he does it, he said the top four are supposed to be special, but they're also kind of realizing that anything can happen at this point, but there's other people beyond that. But it was interesting just discussing with him and those four players, and we talk about Michkov a little bit and just, how they're scouting him, but also you talk about some players beyond it. It sounds like it's a deep draft, but I still feel like if the Blackhawks don't get a top four pick, like this all feels like a wasted season in some ways.
Yeah, when I went out there, and everyone's talking about teams are preparing to pick fifth, sixth, seventh because there's so many bad teams out there that it's going to be hard to finish dead last. And I'm like, and then if you pick in sixth, you blew it. Like, there might be a really good player number six. I mean, you look around the league, and there are so many great players that weren't top three picks. I mean, Jason Robertson, David Pastrnak. Like, there are superstars left and right in the league right now. You got to get one of those guys. And it's just, you might get it at six, but the chances are certainly higher you get it at one, two, or three, or even four. It's tough, though, because you talk about one player changing the course of your franchise. Other than Connor McDavid, and nobody's saying Connor Bedard is going to be McDavid. The comparison I'm hearing most actually is Patrick Kane, which, phenomenal, all-time Hall of Fame player, but he doesn't singularly transform your team the way that McDavid potentially can. So there are superstars all over this league. If you get one, that's great, but you still have to have more than just one, because everybody's got a 60-goal scorer this year, it seems. There are so many great young players in the league. You're going to have more than one. So this draft isn't going to single-handedly fix the Blackhawks. Korchinski needs to pan out. Nazar needs to pan out. Whoever they pick in these next three first rounds where they have all these picks, a lot of these guys need to pan out for the Blackhawks to truly get out of mediocrity.
I think Connor Bedard, has so much appeal beyond just the on ice. Like, it changes. Like, the Blackhawks are likely going to lose Kane and Taves after the season, I guess, depending on what they do anyways, but I don't see them re-signing. They need someone to market, and Connor Bedard is someone you can market around. And even Fantilli and Carlson, like, they're not at that level. Like, I don't think people are going to go out and buy Fantilli and Carlson jerseys. I think Bedard's jersey shows up day one and people are going out and buying it. I think it's a game changer for the Blackhawks and what they need right now. They just Seth Jones is the number one defenseman, but he's never had that appeal to fans. Like, part of it's winning, and part of it's, to be a defenseman, like, usually have to be part of a winning team or just to be some massive points producer, right? Like, fans just don't flock to that. And I think to have an offensive player, like Bedard, like, I think it's a game changer for the organization for what they need. I think it's, some of it's about timeline too. Like, if the Blackhawks get Bedard, I think they accelerate the rebuild a little bit, where they start putting good players around him. I think Fantilli comes out of college. I talked to Scott Wheeler the other day that he thought that Carlson maybe goes back to Sweden for another year, and certainly Michkov is a longer timeline. But if you're drafting fifth, sixth, seventh, you're probably looking at a guy who's spending another year in junior, and guys that are just and Donahue admitted it, 3 years from now, like, we may say these guys are pretty good. But I think that the timeline of everything changes too, and there is sort of, as much as Kyle Davidson, probably thinks 4 or 5 years, like, I think they need someone who's an impact player pretty soon, and you sort of start building around him. I think there's some urgency too. I mean, we haven't heard it, from the organization, but I'm sure they're pleasantly pleased by the attendance. But I think they know that once Kane and Taves are gone, that all this becomes a little bit more challenging.
Yeah, and don't forget, like, Bedard or Fantilli or whoever, there's no guarantee they step in and are instantly great. Connor McDavid was a point-a-game guy as a rookie, but he also got hurt. But you look at, like, Jack Hughes. Jack Hughes is freaking awesome. He's an MVP candidate this year if McDavid didn't exist. He's on pace for 50 goals, 100-something points. His rookie year as the number one overall pick, he had 7 goals and 14 assists in 61 games. And people were calling him a bust already. Like, just because you're going to be great doesn't mean you're instantly great. So it's not like, even if Connor Bedard walks in, he could be a 50-point guy next year. 50 points as a rookie is great. Kane was around 60 points, I think, as a rookie. He wasn't like a 100-point guy as a rookie. Very few guys come in the league as 18-year-olds and dominate. Like Austin Matthews, he came in and scored 4 goals in his first game, but he didn't become Austin freaking Matthews until like a year or two later. So even if you get Bedard, Fantilli, Carlson, not Michkov, obviously, but even if you get one of those guys, it could be 3 or 4 years until they become what Jack Hughes is now. Jack Hughes is only 21 years old right now, and he's just now, scratching the surface of what he could be. So there's no instant fix, but you're right. If you do get a Bedard, you're more inclined to go get somebody to play with him, which expedites this whole process. If you have Lucas Reichel, Connor Bedard, and, solid free agent winger X here, things start looking better quicker.
I think that's the one upside the Blackhawks do have in choosing when they want to accelerate this, is that they're going to have cap space. And, we've talked about them just trying to get to the floor. And you look at this year's class, and I don't know how many of those guys are actually going to be there. But 2 years from now, like a DeBrincat or someone like that, it may, as of right now, it doesn't sound like there's, long-term negotiations with Ottawa, bringing back a DeBrincat or finding someone who's becoming UFA at the right time. It could fit the perfect timeline. I mean, the Blackhawks are going to want to space out some of those I mean, I guess the one challenge of having this many prospects and having them all turn pro within a certain time is that you start having to pay those second, third contracts pretty close too. So at some point, you know, the Blackhawks are probably being kept hell again here in 5-6 years. But they have this window where they're going to have probably a lot of guys in entry level deals and then some money to spend and sort of build a team that way. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to see how this plays out. But yeah, I think that, you know, I mean, obviously the first step is, you know, the draft and seeing who they get. And then, you know, but I think I wrote about it last few weeks too, is just how they're, you know, everyone wants to know what the plan is if the Blackhawks don't get Bedard. And I think it just changes, depends on where they pick, you know, like if it's second, third, fourth. I mean, I think, I think the words is going to have to sign off on it. If they look to try to buy Mitch, you know, they have to draft Michkov. I think it changes the trajectory, but I don't know if any of those guys, fifth, sixth, seventh, are worth passing up on Michkov if that's the case, you know?
Right. And you know, the fans have given the Blackhawks a lot of grace this year, right? They've given them a long leash. They're still showing up, getting 16, 17, 18, 19,000 some nights. They're kind of embracing everything. They understand, just like the players, everybody went into this eyes wide open. Everybody understood the deal, and they're still having fun out there. If you come back next year and say, you know what, we didn't get Bedard, we're tanking again, you lose that. I don't think you can, you know, I know you've said this a lot, that next year could be worse than this year, especially when you lose Kane and Taves. It can't be. I don't think the Blackhawks can get away with that. Like, this isn't a market that's going to tolerate a second straight year of this.
So this is a one-year deal
you got because of Connor Bedard.
Say they draft Carlson and Carlson's like, they decide he goes back to Sweden. That's what he wants. I could see Krejcinski turning pro, and you certainly have Reichel. And maybe you bring back Domi like you wrote about today. I think the challenge is just, you also don't, I think what Davidson's going to have to balance is that you don't want to just go out and get a veteran that, I mean, guys that are 27, 28, they're all looking for long-term contracts. So like that's someone who doesn't fit what you want to be. Justify the contract. Yeah, I think it's going to be challenging. So I think Blackhawks fans could accept losing again if there's young players on the ice.
That's exactly what I was just going to say. Like this year, it's blatant tanking in that you're having Jack Johnson playing ahead of Isaac Phillips and Ian Mitchell every night. Next year, if you got Korchinski in there and you got Reichel on the top line and, you know, you start playing these young guys, that's something you can latch onto. Remember that lockout season, that 2020 season when they just threw all the young guys out there? Fans embrace that. You can get behind that. That's not what this year is. This year is a pure tank job where you intentionally put veterans in the way of your exciting young players because you wanted to shield your young guys from this and you wanted to be as bad as possible. So that they might be bad next year, but if they're bad and exciting young guys are on the team, that's a completely different story. That's not a tank to me. That's a rebuild. That's what a rebuild looks like. This year is tanking. Yeah. If you have Korchinski as you're on your top pairing with Seth Jones, and you've got Lucas Reichel on your front line, then you're not tanking anymore. You're starting that long, slow rebuild. That's a different story.
Yeah, no, I think that's the key. Like, I realize the draft spots kind of dictate who's on the team next year. But if Korchinski's like, I think if they don't draft someone who can play in the NHL next year, that the prior, like, they have to make Korchinski NHL ready. Like, they just, you know, like that, I think that has to become a priority. You need someone who you can market. And I don't think Reichel's just it, you know, like you need a few pieces where people are really clinging to, some future hope.
Looking for an assist with your credit card, but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
We put out a call for questions.
Oh, did we?
Oh, I did. this is from Maxwell Long. At what point does Davidson start to feel some pressure to make trades happen, even if the return isn't quite what they wanted? I know people are talking about the trade deadline, and we're also partly guilty for this starting this in December because that's all we have to write about these days. But nothing honestly usually happens until February and weeks before. So it doesn't sound like Kane and Taze have even told the Blackhawks. You know, it certainly hasn't been leaked yet that they've told the Blackhawks they want to do. So I don't think there's any pressure yet. I think everything is going to still unfold around the deadline, and the conversations will heat up in the next week. You've seen a couple smaller trades kind of trickle through, but I know that this is sort of, I mean, this is what all Blackhawks fans have right now, but it's something that probably won't happen for a few more weeks.
Yeah, I mean, it's usually like a week out from the deadline. That's when you start having things. Then like 2 or 3 days before the deadline, that's when the blockbusters all happen. And that's when everyone on TSN and Sportsnet goes, oh God, what are we going to talk about for 12 hours? Same thing happens every year. We're always wondering, why aren't there trades yet? Why aren't there trades yet? And it's because a lot of teams don't know what they are yet. Like, look at a team like the New York Islanders right now.
Yeah, right. You know, huh?
They're a bad hockey team right now. They have a great goalie and they can't score, but they're only a few points out of a playoff spot. Like, Lou Lamoriello is the most difficult guy to read in the league, but does he want to add right now? Islanders fans are screaming. Poor Kevin Kurz. Every tweet he has, every mention is screaming at him. Why isn't Lou doing something? But is it smart to do something with you when you're like one of five teams jockeying for two wild cards and you haven't really shown you're a good team? A lot of teams are in that vein right now, just trying to figure out what they are. Are we really contenders this year? Do we want to give everything up? And the other factor is, Connor Bedard aside, this draft is freaking loaded. They are every GM and chief scout is super excited about this draft, and they're a little more reluctant than usual to give up a first rounder. Last year, nobody cared about the first round. That's why the Blackhawks were able to get three first round picks. This year, it's going to be a lot harder to extract a first round pick from someone. You better be giving up something like Patrick Kane. You're probably not going to get a first rounder for a Max Domi like you might have a few years ago.
It's incredible. The Islanders only have one win in the last 10 games.
They're terrible. They can't score at all. Yeah. I mean, Ilya Sorokin might be the best goalie in the league, and it's like Corey Crawford a few years ago when the Hawks won 50 games but were terrible. It's all the goalie, man.
From Justin G, any chance Taves, Kane, and Domi all stay, and the Hawks' bigger deadline deals involve McCabe and Murphy would definitely help the logjam at D?
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this a little bit before, is, you know, just because someone has term doesn't make them untradeable. In fact, for some teams, it makes them more appealing. You're more willing to give something up if you know it's beyond just a rental. I don't think they're going to get a lot for McCabe and Murphy, but I think you can get something. And if you can get them off the books, I mean, both of them are well-liked by the Blackhawks. They're solid players. McCabe's having a very good year. I think there's some no-trade protection both guys have, like partial no-trade clauses. So it might get a little dicey on that. But there's no, you know, term is not necessarily an obstacle to a trade, especially for those two guys, because they're not signed to like some mega contracts. They're both in that $4 million range, I believe. They are tradable assets. And, you know, Edmonton and McCabe have been linked. There is nobody that Kyle Davidson sees as untouchable that's on this roster right now. So they certainly could be moved if someone wants them.
I think some of it comes down to, Murphy has a modified no trade clause. McCabe has a modified no trade clause too.
And don't forget, McCabe really wanted to be in Chicago. I don't think he is not happy about the losing, but he also doesn't really want to be move again.
So McCabe's is a 7-team no trade list. And Murphy's is a 10-team,
yeah.
10-team no trade list, according to Cap Friendly. I think some of it's about the return too. Like, the Blackhawks aren't getting money off the books isn't like a driving force for them, because they need money on the books come next year. And right. So if you lose McCabe and Murphy, two guys who seem to be pretty good in the room and guys that are solid enough NHL players, McCabe certainly having a bounce back season, that I don't think the Blackhawks see a downside to having them. One, because of the cap, and two, because you may just have to fill them with guys that are similar next year and paying people, you know, like if you lose Tate and Kane, Domi, and FTCU and et cetera, whoever UFAs, I mean, you're talking about $20 plus million they need to fill just to get to get to the floor. So I think it's about the return too. Like it's if the someone calls for a fifth rounder from McCabe, I don't think the Blackhawks are doing that. Like it has to make some sense to them. You know, something that what Jonas Siegel and I wrote about the other day was about Sam Lafferty and you know how he could fit the Toronto Maple Leafs, you know, need him. And for the Blackhawks, maybe that makes a little bit more sense where, you know, someone who doesn't have a large salary who, you know, as much as the Blackhawks like Lafferty, I don't know if he's in the long-term plans. And if you can get a third rounder for him, then it's probably worth it. But if it's a fourth or a fifth,
is it though? Is a third rounder really worth a pretty decent, you know, bottom six guy who gives you a lot of energy and speed and can kill penalties?
It just depends on what you see. I'm not so sure about that. I don't know. It depends on how you see him. Like, is he part of the future? Like, is he, how far do you see it? Like, I think at this point, the Blackhawks are accumulating assets and some of it's, they need to create some room. Like the fact they have some of these contracts that are, they have some guys that they, I guess, you do have some guys walking, but I guess you're at some point you need to create some space for the guys that you foresee taking that next step too. So, yeah, I don't know. I think Lafferty's an interesting case. Like he's certainly someone I could see stay, but if the right place, I think I could see him go too. So yeah.
You do bring up an interesting point though. We were just talking before about how the Blackhawks need to have some young guys in the NHL next year to make this team interesting and palatable, but you can't have a blue line of, you know, Korchinski and Vlasic and Mitchell and, you know, Del Mastro or whoever you want to put back there, because it would be too cheap. Like, there's got to be, you have to put some money somewhere.
Yeah.
You can't have a whole team of entry-level deals.
I think it's important for them to support those young guys with some veterans, you know, like they have McCabe, Murphy, and Seth Jones paired up with, you know, I think Vlasic and Korchinski are probably NHL players next year. They have those guys paired up with, you know, some veterans, you know, and then maybe Phillips or Mitchell, whomever fills out the bottom of it. And then you have a veteran, you know, Luke Richardson probably will need to get away from benching those younger guys and benching the veteran at some point. But I think that part of it's they need to support those guys with guys who can play too. And I think that's going to be, I think as they bring more younger guys in too, that it's, they're going to want that quality of veteran to improve. And I think McCabe and Murphy and Lafferty too. I mean, Lafferty's a, you know, like a very solid bottom six player. So I wouldn't be surprised at the right price if he's gone, but I also understand if he sticks around. Let's see. This is from Jason Tornquist. This is a question about McCabe, but prior articles depicted Jake McCabe is happy to be home in Chicago, but ready to finally win after years in Buffalo. Does ready to win factor into trade rumors heating up? Yeah, I don't think McCabe really fits that category where the Blackhawks are going to do right by McCabe necessarily. You know, like I think it's
he's not some legacy act here.
Yeah, I think it's it's not that point. So I think if they can get the right price for McCabe and it makes sense, they will. But there's the Blackhawks. Yeah, I don't think they're just going
to. But don't forget these guys and their agents are pretty crafty. Like if they don't want to get traded, they will make their no trade list all the teams that could possibly trade for them.
Yeah.
Like even if you only have a 7 or 10 team list, you could be pretty smart about it and put the teams that would be interested in you. If he puts Edmonton on that no trade list, he ain't going to Edmonton.
So yeah. There's that. I mean, at this point, I imagine that Jake McCabe wouldn't have a problem being traded to a contender at this point, right? Though, too. Like if you, I don't, like as much as you like Chicago, like, I mean, it's probably like this again next year. And then, I mean, you only have so many years on that contract, too. So, like, where do you foresee your future? So, he's going to make Chicago his home regardless in the offseason. So, if there's a chance to win, I doubt that he crafts it to a point where he's picking, you know, like he's ruling out Colorado or something like that, you know. So, from Brady, what's your favorite NHL city to travel to during the season?
Oh, God. I'm always partial to going to New York just because it's kind of home for me. And there's pizza and bagels everywhere, obviously. Honestly, like I've been to every NHL city several times at this stage. This is my 11th season doing this. I like them all. Like there's none of them that I dread going to other than the arena here at Calgary because of the damn press box. You know, I got a sandwich shop, I got a bar, and I got a dinner place in like 30 cities in North America. And I love that fact. You know, I'm going to Edmonton tomorrow. Most people be like, oh God, I'm going to Edmonton. I like Edmonton. Edmonton's cool. I got to go to Bistro Praha. I get to go to a great arena. It's not going to be 300 below zero for a change. Like, there's no cities I hate going to, but favorites, the ones you'd expect, the New Yorks, the LAs, the, you know, the Torontos, Vancouver.
The things that I hate now are it's more about like commute to the airport, like how far I have to stay away from the arena, how far the airport is to
Edmonton's the city. Bad in that regard.
Yeah, like how I Colorado's one of my I hate going to Denver because the airport is just I hate the airport. I hate going from the airport to the
hotel. I love Denver as a city, but yeah
I love getting there. It's so just bad. It's you know, I've taken the train recently, which is better than having to pay for Uber, or I've had to pay just crazy Uber rates in the morning trying to get to the airport at like 6 a.m. And yeah, it's small things like that. Or yeah, it's I guess, yeah, most of the cities I think warm places during the winter are nice. And
when I went to Vancouver Giants practice in Vancouver, it's in a town called Ladner, which is about 20 miles south of Vancouver. Like, it's only like 7 miles from this little sliver of United States, actually, that's there. It's kind of like point something or other. But I went there, and it was like a $35 Uber ride to get there. No big deal. So I finish up at practice. I go to look it up. The cheapest Uber was $237 to go home. Oh, my God. So I waited. I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to go find a bus. And I went to the bus stop, and I checked again, and it was $44. What happened in those 5 minutes that it was $237? Both Lyft and Uber had this insane surge for like 5 minutes. It was bizarre.
I had that recently. I think it was in Seattle when I went to go cover, go see Kevin Kraczynski. Like, it was when I came out, like, it was, yeah, it was because it was, I didn't really do enough research going to the game, but it's a little bit a ways out, like where the Thunderbirds play from, like Seattle proper. So like it was a decent Uber there. And then coming back, I was like, I needed to wait it out. Like, I can't. Yeah.
See, all this stuff, like all these travel headaches, they don't bother me. Like, they never really have, like, even flight delays and stuff. Like, I still really love the travel aspect of this trip. I got a ton of travel coming up between this trip. I'm going to Florida for the All-Star game next week. And then I'm going to Eastern Canada right after that. Cause again, you hate Canada. Newsflash, Scott Powers hates Canada.
You know, my favorite trips ever, and this will be why I don't hate Canada, is when early on in The Athletic and the Brinkett was still in juniors and stuff, it was the Ottawa, Toronto, Montreal trip, and on the off, I got a rental car the entire time, and off days I just went to junior games. I saw DeBrincat one night, and the other night I saw a Q game. It was Kurashev and Bodan were both playing each other, so okay. I went there, and just drove around icy and snowy Canada, and you know, just had my I would listen to the podcast. It was that not hockey, it was the history of the History of the World,
Hardcore History?
Yeah, like the really long podcast.
Oh, Hardcore History.
Yeah. Then that was great. Like, they were like 4 or 5, 6 hour drives, and it was just driving around Canada listening to that. So I do not hate. It just, for whatever reasons, you've had the Canada trip. So next year I will make it up to you, and I will.
No, I don't. I know. I like Canada. You can take it.
People from Nashville hate me. Now you're gonna make all Canadians hate me. So it's all. I just want to have some friends.
You know, Nashville. I haven't been to Nashville. I swear I haven't been to Nashville in years, since pre-pandemic. I don't think I've been to Nashville.
We'll be there for the draft. Yeah.
Yeah.
Nashville. My only dislike with Nashville in the last 10 years is it's how popular it's gotten, and how difficult it is to get hotels, and how everything.
It used to be about the music, man.
Yeah, it used to be about
cheap
Southwest flights and cheap hotels. Now it's
like the cheapest hotel is like $500 a night to stay in a cardboard box.
I can't imagine what The Athletic is going through right now trying to figure out hotel rooms for Nashville.
Oh, God.
We'll be staying in like Knoxville or something like that and just commuting on some bus.
Just do everything over Zoom anyway.
Yeah. From Aiden Walsh, is it worth to trade Taves if the Hawks are only getting a second or third in return? I feel like the captain of 3 cups and the top 5 player in franchise history means more than a third, even if he's here just for the rest of the season. In his case, it's about doing right by Cave. So the Blackhawks would prefer to get a higher pick for Taves, but if he's going to dictate where he wants to go, and ultimately, if the list is if there's only one team, then I think the Blackhawks are up against a little bit. So I can't imagine Kyle Davidson says no, Taves can't be traded. Like, it's I think that it's the ball, you know, unlike McCabe, the ball is in Taves' court there, where he's
and the Hawks are in a good position here PR wise because, you know, they've said over and over again whatever they want is what's going to happen. Where it's going to get tricky is if Jonathan Taves says I want to stay and I want to re-sign. Then it puts the ball back into Kyle Davidson's court. Will you re-sign Jonathan Taves, arguably the most beloved player in team history? Will you let him walk? Not like I wrote that story a couple of weeks ago about franchise icons who left. Mike Modano is still bitter that the Stars didn't give him a contract. Patrick Marleau wanted to stay in San Jose. They didn't do it. These guys want to stay. And then when the team says no, it makes the team look bad. So if Jonathan Toews wants to come back and he'll take a 2-year deal at $3 million a pop, I think you'd be foolish not to let him do that. Because again, the marketing side of things, the value he brings to younger players, the experience and the leadership and all those intangibles everybody rolls their eyes at. I would, if I'm Kyle Davidson, want him back for a cheap deal. I'm not so sure Kyle does, though.
Yeah, I don't think they can afford the PR hit to say no. So I think if Toews is traded, then it's easier everyone to walk away after the season. If Toews stays, that there's some sort of conversation, and there's ultimately the question to Toews is, do you want to resign? And he says yes, then yeah,
I think you'd have to sign him if you want.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, if Kane and Toews want to be here, they'll be here. So final question, and I'm not sure you are qualified to answer this question.
How dare you?
It's from Casey, who's there are two Irish bands. The one's a Clancy. He's basically asking which you prefer, the Clancy Brothers or the Dubliners.
Oh, definitely the Clancy Brothers. They're my favorite.
All right, we'll sit back. I got about a 15-minute explanation here.
Well, I got to get to the morning skate, so keep it up.
Yeah. I've actually been to a Dubliners concert on their last tour through Ireland, which was like 2002. I saw the Dubliners in Limerick, which was a really cool experience. And but the Clancy Brothers also, I had a friend who I grew up, he moved from Dublin to Chicago when he was like in fifth, sixth grade, and I got to know him really well. And his dad used to play Clancy Brothers music in the car all the time. And it's sort of my roots of Irishness and loving drinking songs and all these Clancy Brother drinking songs.
What's your favorite Canadian band though? Come on.
Rural Alberta Advantage.
They're actually pretty good, actually.
Yeah, they are really good. So
I'm an Our Lady Peace guy. Me and Jonathan Toews is the one thing we have in common. We're both Our Lady Peace fans.
Nice.
Good to see you. They're in Chicago and next week. I got tickets. I'm excited.
Oh, cool. When I was in St. Louis, I went to I just went to like a random indie show and just watched three bands that I wasn't familiar with. But it was nice to get out and just it was fun to watch them, see some music. It's been a minute since I did that. So you are in Calgary and then in
Edmonton tomorrow.
Edmonton.
I literally checked in for my flight during this podcast. That's not professional.
Yes. And then you're going to be at the All-Star game.
Yeah, me and Mike Russo and Corey Promen and Jesse Granger will all be there for The Athletic.
Nice. Cool. And we'll have some content coming next week, some things we've been holding on to. And I guess we'll decide if we want to do a podcast next week if there's something to talk about. You have a lot of travel coming up. You have another Canadian trip. And February is going to be here. Like I guess things are going to heal up and there'll be certainly a lot more talk about the deadline stuff. And hopefully some things will have more information about what's going on.
So. Can't wait to see what those March podcasts are going to be like after the deadline.
Oh, I know. We're going to have some more guests. So if anyone wants to hear from anyone, please let us know. And
yeah, we'll just have like random Twitter followers on the, you want to come on the air? Sure. Yeah, let's go.
I'm sure that'll go well. So we will, possibly be back at it next week, if not the following week. And, for Mark Lazarus, I am Scott Powers, and this is Laz and Powers. Talk to you soon. I'm only here for a minute, and I know that I can't fix it. I can help even just a little bit. Won't you let me try?
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.